welcome back. Hope you are all queued up and you have Frank Jacobs' slide material, a link under his name and guests, pulled up on the page and have been following along with us. We're going to go back to that now and take a look at the next one, which is kind of a beautiful gold color. It's deep gold. What color would you call that?
Well, it's kind of, I look at it as a terracotta color, which has been accentuated. And what you see in this picture is sort of it looks like it's glazed.
There might be like a clear coat over it of some kind, yeah. Go ahead.
This glaze, just to finish off on that, actually is not a glaze. It actually is a very, very refined form of polishing, which apparently those people that made these artifacts had developed.
So I was going to ask about that next.
There's actually no glaze on this whatsoever.
I was going to ask about that. Is this buffed, polished, like stainless steel would be? What is that made of? Do we know?
It's organic material. It's sort of like
clay, but harder.
Kind of a form of clay pottery. Yeah, exactly.
Probably fired in a kiln at some point and then buffed, polished. Yeah. Very good.
And these particular ones, the reason that's up there is that there's many, many hundreds of these, and they all depict sort of similar things, but there's a whole lot of them, which and this is one that symbolizes that, they have like an angelic-like being on them with wings. And it's just, you know, with some kind of a connection to this craft. And for us, it was interesting because of what we found out. And as a result of our approach to the astroarchaeological aspect of Mars in the film, which we had, you know, JJ going into and Jerry going into a little bit, we were asked to make a presentation at the Ancient Archaeology Summit in Butuan City in April, exploring sort of more of that aspect, because there was a lot of archaeology people there, but there was nobody there talking about astroarchaeology. So what happened is we went down to Butuan City and we explored and showed a lot of these artifacts, and we were given another interesting, very, very fascinating piece of the puzzle from Valery Yuvanov, who was also there, who's, of course, a pyramid expert. And that, you know, is the reason I wanted to show this slide leading to the next slide is because there's this connection between Mars and Earth, which is written in the legends, and this artifact would seem to indicate or seem to validate that there was, if a winged being, let's say, symbolizes a higher being or maybe a god or something like that, these legends of the gods on Earth then tied to Mars would be interesting if we found evidence of the gods on Earth, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So what we found out from Valery, and this is something that we could now look at the next slide for. I just wanted to set that up a little bit.
Okay. All right, let's scroll on down. Just take a look at that UFO above the stylized caricature of a human with a headdress on. Look at the beam coming down from that thing. Just stunning stuff. And do we date this? Do we have a date?
Well, these all belong to that group of artifacts which have been dated to be somewhere between 6,000 and 12,000 years old, which would indicate, obviously, that there was somebody that was in possession of technology 12,000 years ago that looked like this, because I don't think humans living on the Earth, according to our
They wouldn't have made that up. That's
history,
ridiculous.
They wouldn't. I mean, it might be a fluke that they'd made one of them or two of them, but they've been in hundreds, and they're very, very detailed. And they're very, you know, and they depict a lot of, I mean, this is only just the tip of the iceberg, Jeff. Yeah. I mean, there's so many of them where we're seeing a certain type of writing on them, and we're seeing very clear depictions of some sort of events that are taking place.
Uh-huh.
But we don't have time to go in all that, you know. It's just, these ones are important because they follow along the premise that we were trying to explore the film. To, you know, it's, when you're making a film about something as far out as a survival colony on planet Mars, that indicates that, you know, there's an actual possibility that there's people up on the planet right now in some secret space program. You try to, you don't just want to take it at face value. You actually do want to try to find something tangible that you can explore that makes these things seem a little bit more feasible than just simply taking some whistleblower's word for
it. What are your,
because unfortunately, the whistleblowers often walk away with little more than the shirts on their back out of these secret space programs.
Or worse. Some
worse.
Have paid a worse price than that. What are your thoughts on these now five mummies found at Nazca?
I don't know yet. I'm waiting on that one because I'm a little bit...
They almost look like plaster of Paris molds, don't they? I mean, or something like that.
Right. I mean,
I'm not saying they are. Don't get me wrong.
But, yeah. I read something very early on that they might have been created and that they were made with organic, like bone, so that, you know, the plaster has actually traces of organic matter, and this is enough to fool the initial researchers. And as much as I like and respect Jaime Maussan, it wouldn't be the first time that he's jumped on some sensational story.
He's got a long history.
And then what happened, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly while we were down in...
Yeah.
Sorry. Please.
He's been burned and or has participated in things that he hadn't fully vetted out yet in the past. This has just happened to him. But Jay Widener is behind it. He put that film together on it. He says he was down there. He said it's the real deal. I've known Jay for a long time, so when he says something, it's got weight with me. So we'll see. I also wonder about the three fingers. You got no opposing thumb. That's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge problem.
That's the first thing I thought of, Jeff. You hit it right on the head with that. When I saw three fingers on the thumb, I thought, wait a minute, you know? We all know the thumb opposing the index finger is kind of a critical place in evolution that's separated.
It's absolutely
people.
Everything. Yeah, that
right.
Liberated us from the apes, basically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I don't know. I don't know what to think, and it doesn't really matter if they're real. Then hallelujah, you know, great, it'll come out.
Sure.
If it's important, it'll probably, even if it is vindicated as real, still be ignored by the mainstream. So it doesn't.
I think you can count on that, Frank. Count on it. I do.
Yeah, and in that sense, time doesn't play any factor whatsoever. I mean, we looked at these things that we have here that we're looking at right now. You know, we were aware of them 7-8 years ago, and even till now, they're still not out there. They've still not changed history. And the thing is, history will only ever be changed by a very, very small group of people that persevere and gather this information and put the information together in a way that will survive and be presented at some point when it's maybe safer. And it seems like right now this model of keeping society stable is highly, you know, is still, you know, highly intact, and probably will only really change when the gatekeepers decide to open the floodgates, and then it'll probably be in a controlled arc that they leak the information out.
Of course it will. Do you know that 30 years ago there were 5 billion people on the planet? 5 billion people. And in just 30 years, the population increased by 2.5 billion. There's 7.5 billion now. We are on the way out. We are in an extinction event in the preliminary or early stages of it. The planet can't tolerate any more people. It's got enough now. So at any time, as you well know, they can go to the shelf and take off some kind of a lid and pour out some freeze-dried bacteria or viruses that will decimate an enormous number of people on the planet. They can do that. They have that capability. So look for something like that potentially to happen. Too many people. It's real simple. 2.5 billion in 30 years? And how long did it take to get up to crawling its way up to 5 billion? Thousands of years, technically. And it leaps to 7.5.
It's pretty scary when you think of it that way. What's also, what one should keep in mind, though, with those kind of scenarios is that along with this boom in population, which is an exponential growth, you can actually plot a line in terms of information. If you look back at, if this information line is being plotted over the last 300 years, you'll see for many, many years, the amount of information that was passed from one generation to the next generation is virtually hardly moving. It's just parallel to the base of the graph. But as the graph moves to the right, when you get up to the industrial era, starting in the 1900s, the amount of information which is exchanged between generations begins to rise dramatically. And that curve begins to double every year. And when you look at where we're in right now, this information curve, that means the amount of information that's being passed along from generation to generation is virtually vertical, going straight up. Mm-hmm. So you know that it indicates, because we are all connected, we're all connected in the magnetosphere of the Earth, the spiritual aspect of us, of oneness that, you know, many shamans talk about, it's written in a lot of New Age books. It is real. It's just, it hasn't really manifested yet, but it's actually being forced to be manifest. So the upside of all these people and all these minds is that we're also headed for a massive shift in consciousness, which is being supported by events taking place in the cosmos, such as radiation and cosmic rays that are hitting us right now on Earth in unprecedented ways that are affecting our DNA and are affecting our pineal gland and are affecting the production of things like dimethyltryptamine, which is allowing people to have visions and information and insights, which they never had before at the level that they're having them and the amount of people that they're having them. So I'm trying to stay optimistic in terms of our potential here to not just eradicate ourselves, but actually that there's a known model that if you look at the development of cells, whenever cells reach the magnitude of around 7 to 10 billion, there is a new organism formed. And that organism will then grow to be about that magnitude of numbers. And then a new organism will grow. And the whole evolution of a body from an egg to a human being follows this route, which is, you know, very much the, you know, the sacred geometry of our universe, which is written everywhere. So I think we have to always leave our minds open to that potential that we will actually organize ourselves at some magnitude of numbers of, say, 10 mm-hmm. billion. We have the resources on the Earth to support 10 billion if we do it smartly. The problem is right now it's being reigned by chaos. So we have all these, you know, this diverse factions of populations which are, you know, totally unsophisticated or being dumbed down or being bombed, you know, down through warfare. And there's, you know, the resources are being plundered only by a very minority amount of people for projects which have nothing to do, and they're not sharing them with the masses. So we have this chaotic model of the world right now that reigns. And I think the only way we're going to get past it is if this evolution does actually happen and we balance out that structure of thinking, that structure of society into a higher level of society, which is, I think, there's evidence of that type of society on the planet that goes back many, many eons. And it's also interesting when you look at this information, like in relation to Mars, that's like, you know, with this topic, and you find that there may not have only just been one civilization. Uh-huh. There's actually been the rebirth of many civilizations. Some of them have been wiped out by cosmic disasters, apparently. Others have been wiped out by sheer, I guess, stupidity. Maybe
absolutely. You're echoing that's my theme since college. Great. We've done this before on the planet over and over and over in the 4.5 billion years. And yeah, we've screwed
exactly.
up. Things have happened. Stuff happens. But primarily, I think, honestly, we probably have been involved in our own demise in most cases. Look what we've done now to the planet, for God's sakes. It'll heal itself in 100,000 years or a 500,000 years when we're gone, and we'll crawl back up again. Maybe we'll learn next time. I don't know. But look at the radiation in India. Clearly evidence and residuals of a nuclear exchange at some point. The Vimanas, the ancient Sanskrit stuff. It's all indicative of a civilization that used to be here, but it's gone.
Right. Well, speaking of that, this depiction of this godlike being was very interesting for us, because when we were in Butuan City, we met Valery Uvanov, and he shared something which really kind of hit the home run for us. And that's one thing I'd like to share, you know, with your audience tonight as well.
Sure. Our next picture is Pyramid of the Sun, Pyramid of the Moon, and go ahead.
Exactly. Now, what we're looking at here is an aerial depiction that shows, it's about 5 kilometers from above this area called the City of the Gods, which is Teotihuacan. And it shows us essentially on the right-hand side the Pyramid of Kukulcan, which is Quetzalcoatl, and which also symbolizes the bringer of culture, of wisdom, of information. In the middle, you have the Pyramid of the Sun, and on the left, you have the Pyramid of the Moon. Now, what we learned when we were in Bhutan City is that the Pyramid of the Moon actually should be called the Pyramid of the Earth. And the reason for that is can be shown when you actually look at this aerial depiction of this region and you project the orbits of our solar system, of the planets on top of it, you will see what I'm talking about. So that would be the next slide.
Okay. Scroll down to the next one. And there we are. Okay.
What these gods that we're talking about apparently did is that in the case of Teotihuacan complex, is that the orbit of the Earth coincides with the positioning of the Pyramid of the Moon, which is why it should actually be called Pyramid of the Earth. The orbit of Mars coincides with positioning of the Temple of Kukulcan, and in the center of it all, you have the Sun.
Now, is this this is pre-Aztec, right?
Yes. I mean, this also goes back to, well, you know, again, all these datings that we're being told officially are all, you know, I don't necessarily want to invest in them, because they keep, first of all, I know very, very well that the dating archaeology gives us isn't accurate based on our association with Klaus. So it's irrelevant. What's important here is that it's fascinating to see that whoever built these things had a very refined view of the solar system, so accurate that they were actually able to lay out their constructions to the grid of the solar system. But it goes even a step further than that. You know, if you look at the next slide, you see another perspective of this area.
Okay, going down to the next one. Right. We don't know really what date this. It's possible that the Aztecs came along, kind of like the modern or semi-modern Egyptians, and inherited this stuff. All right, we don't know.
You're getting at something which I find is a conclusion that I'm coming to more and more, is that the artifacts that we're finding in terms of monuments on the planet, which are being dated, weren't necessarily built by those who history is being shown to be the ones that built them. So even in Egypt, you know, mm-hmm. this dating of 2,500 years ago, and this whole concept of the Egyptian pharaohs, and it may not be true to history. It might just be true to convenience.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
This area here is another part of the planet where the architects actually built these indicators of our history directly into the monument, so that there would be no question as to, you know, where we came from, let's just say. So, you know, if we look at the next slide, you'll see the depiction of this of the complex with the planets superimposed on top of them.
Okay, very easy to see. Just scroll down.
And the roadway, you'll note that from Mars, from where Kukulkan Khan's temple is, mm-hmm. there's a straight roadway leading to the Earth, mm-hmm. past the sun, mm-hmm. which, again, supports the idea that, and the people that go to this complex, they often journey along this road. They take this journey of the gods, as they call it, where they walk from Kukulkan all through the complex and end up at the pyramid of the moon, mm-hmm. or the pyramid of the Earth, as we mm-hmm. call it, to make, you know, the ascent. And it's sort of a symbolic depiction of the journey that apparently we must have made from Mars. And Kukulkan, interestingly enough, is also known as Marduk. And
very
Marduk,
interesting.
You know, if we have
yeah.
time for it,
uh-huh.
we can go into some of this ancient stuff, you know, if we have time for it. But yeah. obviously, the relation between Earth and Mars is very specialized, and it's very clearly shown in this depiction.
Uh-huh.
But these gods who built these complexes and built our history directly into them took it even a step further. And that's one thing you see on the next slide.
Okay, go down to that. All right, very good.
If you look at, if you measure the height of the pyramid of the moon, it's 42 meters. And
not
if you
really
measure the height
yeah.
of the Kukulkan temple complex, the pyramid of Kukulkan, mm-hmm. it's 22 meters, which gives you a ratio of 1 to 0.523. And that ratio is a diameter ratio that corresponds to the ratio of the Earth's diameter to Mars.
What a coincidence.
Isn't that interesting?
No coincidence. Yeah, we're going to go through the break on this one, Todd. Thank you. We're right in the middle of this. I don't want to break away from it. But, yeah, these things, the ancients didn't leave things to chance. And when I fast forward to the Aztecs, so inhumanly barbaric and cruel and bestial, it doesn't add up in my mind
right.
to a people that would have this kind of an intellect, a godlike intellect, who would understand the solar system, understand it. No, I think they walked into this way later and then used it for their own nefarious rituals, which were not very
right.
cool.
It seems more realistic that the trend of the priests of our recorded history seems to be far more barbaric than would be, you know, you would be logical, right? I mean, if you have the access to space technology, you can travel between planets, and you have obviously cracked the mystery of energy, of free energy, of tapping the universe to provide your source of energy. Why would you need slaves? You know,
right.
why would you need? I mean, there would be a prosperous society, which obviously would be existing at a level much, much more complex, much more refined than we have in the history books that has been shown to us.
The ritualization of human slaughter was taken to a disgusting level. You know, and people don't know this, but the bodies that had their living hearts ripped out of were tossed down these structures, and they were grabbed, taken away, immediately butchered, and eaten. This was a source of protein for the Aztec civilization. They ate these people. So that's not talked about. That's one of those things that's kind of hushed up because it's not very cool.
Right, right. I mean, it's a contradiction because you're trying to say, well, look at this advanced civilization that we found, these pyramids
right,
who
right.
built them,
right.
and then at the same time they were barbaric, cannibalistic, ritualistic, bloodthirsty.
Exactly.
It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't resonate with me, Jeff. I just never ever really invested anything in that concept and that cosmology that's being presented, because it's just very clear that it isn't right. It doesn't feel right to me. And I'm really glad that I waited until I made Packing for Mars, because when you start making a film like this, you begin to explore sort of a different, you know, you take a different approach to things and you come across information unexpectedly, which begins to fill in the bigger picture about who we really are. And, you know, part of that bigger picture is now emerging. And we have, you know, not only just the whistleblowers, which are talking about, apparently, you know, there's a kid in Russia, the Barishka boy that I'm sure you know about, Bill Ryan and Kerry Cassidy interviewed years ago, who was having memories of his life on Mars. There's the Terra Papers written by Robert Morningsky, which describes, you know, Bekhti, this creature that landed, I guess crash-landed, and escaped capture and was taken up by the Native Americans, who told the oral history of the whole universe, in which the gods like Osiris and Thor and all these myths that we have in our mythology, they're not myths. They're actually real events that took place and have only bled their way down in the forms of myths and legends to our time now. So you have all this stuff going on that indicates that there was this ancient history, and the whistleblowers like that are coming out now that are talking about these outrageous stories, they're even, you know, if you can't believe them because they have no evidence, they're worth looking at simply because they're from a cultural perspective, they're fascinating. Where are these memories coming from? Where is this information coming from? Because it's consistent within itself. And these people are out there in the public talking about it. And if they were really making it all up, you know, they'd be stumbling. And, you know, and maybe they are stumbling in some cases. Maybe they are even misinformation agents. We don't know that. But it's worth looking at them all and not holding an opinion about it yet. Because as we see, as we mentioned our friend Jaime earlier, sometimes it's not good to have an opinion right off the bat. It's better to just kind of look at everything, look at the big picture, and see how it evolves. So it's kind of foolish to discount the testimony of whistleblowers, even if it sounds outrageous, because it might fit into a piece of the puzzle which comes later down the road. And some of those puzzles are now coming out. In fact, Dr. John Brandenburg is another person that emerged right at the time when we dropped Packing for Mars into Contact in the Desert as a sneak preview in 2015, months before we officially released it. We discovered that there's a plasma physicist out there who has worked with NASA, and he's actually analyzed the Mars atmosphere, and he's approached that whole concept of Mars and a possible secret history from another totally different perspective. Not even talking, you know, crazy whistleblower stories here. He's just looking at the readings of ions and particles like a plasma physicist person in his geeky way would probably do. And he has discovered something astounding, you know, which has to do, again, which supports the idea that there's an ancient civilization on the surface of planet Mars. But he's backed it up with his analysis of Xenon 129, which shows that the Mars atmosphere has about 2.5 times the level of Xenon 129 as we have on Earth and every other planet in our solar system. They're all the same because all of them are built from the same building block. But Mars is the only exception. And his only conclusion is that the form of Xenon 129, which is found and can be traced, has only one form of creation when it's not in balance with the solar system, that is artificial creation. And more specifically, the creation of nuclear bombs, fast fusion reactions. So he was able to, in his research, show that essentially, if you look at the amount of Xenon 129 on Earth, and you relate to the increase in Xenon 129 on Earth, which has taken place since the creation of the nuclear programs on Earth, which started in the 40s, and you plot it up on a graph compared to the levels of Xenon 129 on Mars over time, you'll see that the Mars and Earth Xenon is virtually identical. So what happened on Mars in this conclusion can only be one conclusion, and that is there was a massive cataclysmic event that took place there. He figures it was about 1 million years or maybe more ago, which wiped out the civilization living there, and specifically over two regions. One, which was just upwind from the Cydonia Plateau, and the other one upwind from Galaxia's Chaos, which interestingly are the two areas on Mars which most of these artifacts that we're talking about that you've mentioned earlier can be found.
Wow.
So, and on top of it, there were now, after 20 years of waiting for NASA to finally fly over the D&M pyramid in the Sidonia region, you know, that five-sided pyramid that there's been a lot of speculation about. Well, it's finally happened. They've flown over and they've taken high-resolution pictures, and those pictures clearly show remnants of an ancient city. And we can look at that in the next picture if your viewers want to click on the next picture.
Yeah, scroll
it's
on down.
Which very, very, it's something which very few people on Earth have ever been exposed to. And when Brandenburg brought that out, and much to his credit, and I'm giving him a big plug here, he's shown in scientific lingo, he published his paper and he handed it into the Pentagon. And he waited 6 months, according to his story, and they came back to him and they said, fascinating, publish. So this is, we're seeing right here is disclosure. This is disclosure happening in a soft fashion. Now, Brandenburg's being attacked by a lot of people, of course. Scientists are saying he's out to lunch, you know, this isn't working. But if you look at this picture here, it's clear that, and he's had this analyzed by geologists. These formations that you're seeing here, this grid system here that you're depicted in this picture.
Oh, I think we've missed that. I'm afraid we missed that picture. Let me see. We go.
It's right after the.
Yeah, it's right after the Earth Mars ratio.
Earth Mars ratio. Compared,
yeah. But next to that, we're into our Mars images next. But there's the hook.
Oh well.
We got the hook.
We're missing that. This should be started with. You should be looking at the D&M pyramid.
Okay, I'm not seeing it. I'm going to ask that it be put in there, but we're going to have to move on to the.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, the thing is, it's clear from these images, and it gets even clearer. And one of the images that was up there was the image of Pompeii, the buried city that they found on Earth. Which has a form of building where, you know, multiple dwellings are built on one central wall. And if you look at the northwest corner of the D&M pyramid, you see this building this formation of building structures that was employed, which seems to match exactly what we can find right here on Earth. So even the building structures and the cultural aspect of how to build a metropolis coincides with ancient civilizations here on Earth, again reinforcing the aspect of this ancient connection that once took place between Earth and Mars. Now, and probably another picture that maybe they're going to have up there is the, if you're missing those ones, is the fact that the CIA has done remote viewing experiments. And I was recently with their recent, they have a new website and they've released a lot of the documents that are under the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah.
And I was digging around in that database and I stumbled upon a very interesting document, which is essentially a document that shows, that in 1984, the CIA was deeply involved in Mars exploration with remote viewing. And specifically, their remote viewing was time of interest that they were targeting was approximately 1 million years ago. So here again, we have another correlating factor, right?
Yeah,
we have Brandenburg talking about 1 million years ago, and we have the CIA looking. Now, why would the CIA in 1984 be so interested in exactly that time period of Mars if they did not already know that something was up there?
You bet.
This is something which Brandenburg talks about. He says, we've known about this since the Viking days. Since 1976, we've known that there are artifacts on the surface of Mars, and we've kept it quiet. And the reason is, which is why one of the first slides that we talked about tonight, this Brookings report, it's just important for the gatekeepers to keep this information to themselves. And it's clear to me that what they've gotten into here is they've discovered something on the moon and on Mars, and maybe not the only reason they're going to Mars and the secret space program to colonize it is a survival colony, but maybe they're going there with the technology they reverse engineered, fascinated by this particular ancient heritage that we've discovered on these planetary bodies.
Well said.
No, that was a lot of said.
Very well said, yeah. I'm going to have James go back through the images and see if we can restore those. But for now,
yeah,
let's keep moving.
Yeah, you should have an image of... let's keep moving. You know, so again, you know, like we've now covered a lot of areas of history and artifacts, but what about, you know, current artifacts? And you talked about that earlier in the show, and I've
right.
put together here a few of the images that have been recently been analyzed by Mars anomaly hunters, you know, which you really got to give them a plug here, because these anomaly hunters, they're really doing us a great service.
They are,
you know,
they're doing the government's work for them, basically.
They're doing the government's work, you know. I mean, you got Rami Bar-Ilan with his exclusive Mars images on Facebook. You know, he's putting daily images up. Now, maybe not all of them are artifacts. Some of them really are maybe rocks that look like something.
Yeah.
But you cannot discount that in each and every case.
Well, take a look at this first image, Frank. Come on.
Exactly.
Look at it. There's a hook, and if you look at the whatever that is, wreckage of some kind, to the left,
right.
It's got two long, look like, well, they're arms, and they're bent around, they're curved. This is an intelligently designed piece of something that was blown out.
Yes.
It's still sitting on the surface. Maybe the winds are keeping it exposed. Hard to know. But and maybe it's a relatively more recent artifact. I don't know. But look at it with a magnifying glass, and you'll see all kinds of things that are not rocks. They're not natural formations. These are artificial formations of some kind. It's a machine. It's a device
rocks,
of some kind.
You know, that rocks would form in this way.
No way. No chance.
Through use, through erosion. If we're looking back at a million year history, Jeff, I mean, let's face it, something lying on the surface of Mars for a million years exposed to what it's been exposed to, it's going to be beat up. So don't expect to see, you know, we can't expect to see an iPhone lying there. But when we see something like this, which clearly looks, it's reflective, it's shaped like a hook, and it's lying in proximity to other artifacts, or what appear to be artifacts that look like they're artificial, it's lying in an area which has been shown to be littered with other artifacts, which is also very close to an area which Brandenburg's talking about being demolished by an ancient cataclysmic nuclear event where civilizations took themselves out. There has to be damage here. Like if two nuclear bombs in the magnitude of a billion megatons, which is what Brandenburg estimates from the xenon 129 readings in the atmosphere, took place right over above ground, then whatever was on the ground was just flattened, and it's amazing that there's anything left to be seen. So what we are seeing is a miracle, and what we're seeing here needs to be taken seriously, because it's just so profound that the Mars rover is cruising past these things, photographing them, and then moving along. I mean, the funniest story Brandenburg's talking about was with the Mars rover, the actual pilots or the drivers.
The controllers,
I don't know if it was
back
true
at,
or not.
They're back at JPL is where they are.
Right, exactly. They specifically recruit California drivers, because the California mindset of a driver is already tuned to seeing, when you're driving along the road, you see something crazy on the side of the road, you just keep going.
That's funny. I got another question about this image. The top half is what we'd call colorized or color corrected. What are you suggesting here with this? Whoever put this together, are we suggesting that the washed out beige tones of the bottom third half of the picture are really artificially induced to make us not see things, and that the top reflects what really would be the ambient color of these objects, whatever they are?
Well, you know, you hit on an important point there, because it's clear from Jose Escamilla's work about the moon, which he actually found the network online. You can find lunar surface maps that are in color. Most people thought the moon was black and white, but
no,
there's actually color pictures that were taken. Yeah. And I'm sure you're familiar with it, right? And
I've known Jose for 25 years, and he is his work is extraordinary. He's brilliant.
Right,
and
so when, yeah, why would it be any different, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course. When he did that with the moon, and you watch his black and white terrain go by, and then he color corrects it to show what is really there, you just about fall over. The moon is a very colorful place.
That's right, yeah. And so what we're seeing, you know, the point you made, I think that's it's serious consideration is that what we're seeing here on the top part of the picture is much closer to reality than the smudged out or, you know, faded out, filtered NASA rendition.
Now, shame on NASA, you know.
NASA. If I was a scientist working at ESA or any other astronomer, astrophysicist, I would be outraged because I would. It obviously means that there's a filter between what's being documented on the surface of the planet and what's being handed to the scientists for research. So a lot of the scientists, I believe, are not, you know, they're not all part of some conspiracy. I think they're really all being manipulated by the data which is being presented to them. And that includes data about the atmosphere as well. One of the people that contacted us after we released the film works in the U.S. Patent Attorney's Office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's in touch. He contacted us and he told us that he's been in touch with his own whistleblower via telephone calls and emails that that has been working on technology that has been providing materials to and from Mars since the 70s, and that we've been up there since the 70s. And his statement was, if he doesn't believe him, all he has to do is take a look at the CO2 readings of the Earth's Mars' atmosphere starting in the 60s up until today, and you'll see an increase, which is also clearly reflected in a lot of more recent pictures you're seeing from Hubble that look at Mars. You actually see cloud formations which are very, very prominent. It's not just this gray.
What you're saying, and let me just jump to the punchline here, is that the ongoing terraforming of Mars is beginning to show physical evidence that we can see.
Yes, and it's becoming undeniable. And I mean, we have some more of those artifacts here and some of the other pictures that we could look at.
There are
things here.
We'll go through a couple more. You know what I'd like to do? Ask you if you'd come on one more time for another hour, put together the missing pictures that we don't have tonight. Well, you've got them, but we'll get James to get them straightened out. Add a few more of these Mars anomalies, 5 or 10, whatever. We'll go through them in an hour and just have a good time showing people what they're being kept from. It's really outrageous.
Definitely.
So next, we'll do that in a week or two if you want. Next picture.
Yeah.
This is a knockout. This is absolutely a knockout. How can you look? This picture is not a joke. It's not some Photoshop creation. It's digital reality. Lower right shows the image that we get from NASA. You wouldn't give it a second thought, basically. Look at the washed out colors. Step up from that straight up on the right side. Look at the colorized version, getting it back to us in terms of color differentials. And then look what happens. Look at the glare that has been completely eradicated. I'm going to call that a robot with shoulders, just for fun, just right now for fun. It's a head with shoulders.
R2-D2.
And on each shoulder, the sun is being reflected. Look in the lower right picture. What do you see? Do you see any reflection? Hell no. It's all been neutralized. The pictures are frauds is what they are. Now, we look up, we see a landscape full of color, diversity, then we move over to the close-up of this thing, and I don't know, I have no idea what it is, but it's not natural. It's a machine or a relic of a machine, something. What do you think?
You know, and it's also, when you see this, you just, again, always the question comes to my mind, why is the rover not going closer for a closer look?
It should take a right turn and go right up to this thing. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And look at the, go back to the picture on the right top. look just to the left of the whatever this thing is, R2-D2, and there is a round something sticking out. It looks like it's not part of it necessarily, but it's got purposeful lines in it, glyphs of some kind. It's a flat kind of a tablet-looking thing. I don't know what it is. And then look at that first picture that NASA released. It's it has intentionally been washed out. And if you look at the smudge on the left boundary of this, let's call it a clay tablet for fun, just for fun. Look at the left boundary at what NASA released. Look at the added lines, they're horizontal lines that weren't there, that aren't there in the top picture. Look at that faded out, washed out picture. Look at the left margin, the left edge. It's almost gone. You can't see it. And then they've added another they've added one horizontal line. You can see it. It's near the top, below the two eyes. We'll call them eyes just for fun. Anyway, it just disgusting what they do.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing about these pictures. When you look at the surrounding area, often, the obvious thing, like the R2-D2, is what you fix on. But like you say, if you start looking in the peripheral area, you begin to see a lot of very interesting things in the ground, in and around. And it would be consistent with the idea of some kind of a mass destruction event or maybe a crash. I mean,
correct.
We have people talking from Mars.
Yeah.
You know, we have Duncan O'Finion, you know, having recollection of being in the MK Ultra program as a pilot ferrying between Earth and Mars in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it would coincide with a lot of interesting stuff taking place in the 80s relative to the secret space program, and he crashed. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's true, then there would probably need to be some kind of evidence of something. So what we're looking at may not even be ancient artifacts. See, some of these things could be current things, accidents that happen. Who knows what it is. But the question is less, what it is as to why it is and why are we not looking at this closer and why is this not being discussed in a wider public forum?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, it's it's the age-old issue that we don't deserve to know. We don't have a birthright to know that there are intelligent life forms all over the galaxy, all over the universe in all likelihood. All right, let's go down and look at one more picture in the last couple of minutes. Here's a wild one. Look, you know what it looks like? Looks like a vacuum cleaner attachment, almost, to get in the... get in those crevices.
Yeah.
That's wild. Just sitting on top of the...
Yeah, that's really wild.
Just something just sitting on top of the ground, and what unusual ground it is. And it does appear to be plastic, although that wouldn't probably hold up after a million years unless there was some more recent cataclysm there.
Right.
Or somebody was cleaning the Curiosity with a vacuum cleaner, and they left the attachment there by mistake.
That's a very good theory right there. No, but it does look like a vacuum cleaner hose. And I look at this as a picture of something which indicates more recent activity on the surface.
Yeah, it looks like somebody just was, they were using it, they pulled the hose off, they set the attachment there and just forgot about it.
Forgot it.
It looks like it's been placed there. Look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a magnifying glass, and that's very helpful. If you look at it with a magnifying glass, on the left end of it, you'll see two items that have look like threads on them, look like threads on a screw or a bolt. I don't know that that's accurate, but a magnifying glass is a good thing to have when you look at these kinds of things. They're just... full of fascinating things, these pictures. So stick together another string of them. Love to have you come back in a week or two, and we'll spend another hour and look at some of these items.
Sounds great.
Thank you for everything. What an articulate, extremely well-presented case you've made for so many things that are really obvious. And they're right there looking at us. They're looking back at us, folks. They're right there. Talk soon.
Okay.
All righty. Good night.
Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Oh, you bet. All right. So there you go. We'll bring him back, and he'll add some images to this group, and we'll have some more fun. Just remarkable things up there on Mars. It just looks like somebody was using that, and they pulled it off the end of a vacuum hose and set it down there. Isn't that funny? All right. That's our program on Friday night for you. Have a great weekend, and we will talk soon.